on, everybody. Welcome to episode 169 of Rain Delay Radio. I am Pat, back from my trip to the Midwest, ready to talk all things baseball this week. And I am joined by my good buddy, Rack. How you doing, man?
Today was not great. Somehow I'm always on this podcast on the not great days in my life. However, it always 100% brings me out of the funk just hearing your voice. So I am
nice.
Excited to hear.
That's awesome. I'm back from the Midwest. I wanted to talk about the trip a little bit here because I got to see a game at Target Field for the first time. And I actually got to see history, too, at that game. So I traveled to Minnesota for work. I do a lot of traveling for work, install IT equipment in new sites that we get. I'm an IT guy. I'm a computer dude. So I often
Nerd.
Travel for that. Yeah. You know, I love my job. My job's awesome. My job's
like,
great.
I'm not telling you you're a nerd on a baseball podcast or anything. Like, that's a real zinger here.
My job's awesome. I work with great people. I have a great boss, and they give me this opportunity to travel, and I get to see the country, and it's awesome.
So I
went to Minnesota. First, let me talk about Minnesota. Incredible state. The absolute nicest people I think I've ever met. As far as just like, I don't know them, but it's just my general interaction with people in the state. They're ridiculously nice. Like, going through TSA and MSP was the most satisfying experience I've ever had, because like, there's just like, yeah, come on through, buddy. You know, you can come on through. You know, where you going? Where you flying to? Yeah, that sounds fun. You know, hope you're having a good day. And, you know, they're just like, oh, put your hands up and, you know, we're going to do the spin-a-rooney thing. And like, and this is the Minnesota accent, you know, which I picked up briefly on my way back. Yeah, come on through, buddy. You know, yeah, come on through. And it's, you know, just nice people, just incredibly nice people. And I definitely say, yeah, with everything. And yeah, buddy, you know, these kind of things happen, you know, stuff like that. Just very, very nice people, which is why I did not want to leave. I kept saying to everyone, like, I don't want to come home. I would like to stay in Minnesota. And like, I got off the plane in Philadelphia and was greeted to someone screaming in the airport. And that made me realize, yeah, I want to go back to the Midwest. Don't make me come back here.
I texted you this when you sent this. I'm really offended that you didn't come up and say hi. I was the guy screaming at the airport and you wouldn't even talk to me. God,
I know, right?
Jeez.
I should have known better. But that was Minnesota overall, an incredibly beautiful state. So I stayed in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area. I got to see St. Paul the first day I was there. And then
I love St. Paul.
St. Paul's beautiful. You know, I often refer to the capital of every state as the crapital, but wasn't much of a crapital. It was a very, very nice little city.
I've been to 21 state capitals so far. I think St. Paul's top five. I think St. Paul, Richmond. God, I hate to say it, Austin. Mm. There's some good capitals out there, but you've obviously never been to Jackson, Mississippi, which is where I was last week, and that is a crapital.
Yeah.
It's no one's fault but the state governments, but yeah. Anyway, St. Paul was walkable.
St. Paul was very nice.
Their downtown was relaxed. I take it you didn't get to go to a Saints game.
No, I did not. When you go back,
that's one of my favorite minor league stadiums. And for the longest time, it was Independent League.
Really?
It's very small Independent League, but they were such a high grossing Independent League because back in the day of 5 years ago, Major League Baseball said, you're too close to a Major League affiliate, you can't be affiliated. And yet they let Tacoma and Seattle coexist for so long. But anyway.
Interesting.
And finally, they said Sugar Land and St. Paul make sense as AAA stadiums.
Yeah.
Which was the best thing of the minor league reorganization. Was
now, are they the Twins AAA?
Yes. Okay. So my first...
Rochester used to be the Twins. So
for forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like I saw Royce Lewis come through the Lehigh Valley a lot.
So this is funny while we're talking about Royce. My first trip to Minneapolis was 2 years ago to see the A's. So I was at a St. Paul Saints game. It was like $2 beers. Don't really remember anything past the fifth inning because then I went to a punk concert a couple blocks down the road.
Yeah.
Bakke. Man, one of the openers was really good. I can't remember exactly what they were. Somehow I got home on 2% battery. Nice. I think my phone died in the Uber. Anyway, Royce Lewis was there. He got a walk. He got a double, whatever. He was called up the next day Minneapolis for his major league debut. I violently started throwing up that morning. Was sick all day. Stumbled to the metro stop because I flew. I didn't drive. Stumbled to the metro stop on an empty stomach, took the metro all the way into Target Field.
Nice.
Got there when the gates opened and then saw Royce Lewis's debut and Jose Miranda's first big league home run.
How about that?
Yeah. So what were your first impressions of Target Field on that note?
So I, first off, super cheap. I got like lower level first baseline tickets, $40. Now, if I wanted those tickets in Philadelphia, I would have been spending about $100, if not more. Like $40 at a Citizens Bank Park gets you to the bleachers. That's like the way, third level kind of crap. So the view was incredible. The ballpark is very nice. Again, very nice people. It's a lot smaller than I expected. So, like, Citizens Bank Park is huge in that there's so much to see. Like, there's so much history that you can, like, Philly's history that they have on display for you to look at. Ashburn Alley is just a huge conglomerate of different food vendors and everything out in center field. And then, like, the overall ballpark itself, you have so many vendors throughout. This one, you know, Target Field was just one alley of food vendors. You had the team store, so it was a lot smaller than I expected. But that's not a detriment to it. That's a plus, because it was very easy to get to where I needed to go and do what I needed to do.
So I also sat in the lower deck.
Yeah.
All 3 days, because I went to all three games. The A's lost all three by one run. So yeah. I traveled several hundred miles just to see my team get beat frustratingly. But I thought that because I entered in on the metro. I don't know if you drove. I'm sure.
I did drive. So parking was very easy.
Okay. That's good. Yeah.
Very, very easy.
I mean, the metro getting off, I kind of liked the atmosphere. I think they did a good job of capturing it. The concourse is, I don't want to say generic, it's just there, but that's fine.
Yeah.
It's the concourse. You're not there for any longer than to get food and get back to your seat. And there's a lot to look at when you're in your seat.
Yes.
The right field area that they have going there, the little stand around and drink and talk area. A lot of ballparks are adding that. I think they do it the best of all the ballparks I've seen. The like
by that.
Neutral space, all the bleacher views. I think my favorite spot is left field. I liked left field. You felt like you were close, but it was also bleacher seats. And where you were, no, I was down the third base side. Third base side seats were pretty good too. The A's announcer, Ken Korak, that's his favorite ballpark. And so, like, going in, it's like, oh, is this going to be a good ballpark? It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It
was definitely beautiful.
Definitely like, top five.
So I've been to Well, let me keep going. So, like, really impressive views. Where I sat was great. You could see everything. Perfect view of the strike zone and all that. The food was cheap. I tried a, I believe it's Kramer Chuck's bratwurst. And I got it loaded with the sour cream and onions, and, or not the sour cream, the sauerkraut and onions. And I threw some spicy mustard on it. Absolutely delicious. Fantastic. Very impressed. The souvenir cup. I always like to get a souvenir cup at every stadium I go to. Now, the most expensive souvenir cup I've purchased was from Citi Field for like $35. The one I got. Yeah, dude, Citi Field is disgusting with how expensive it is. Real quick, I went to Citi Field last year.
You went with our friend.
I went with Corey, who's been on the pod before, and
right.
Ben. I think it was last year I went to Citi Field. Stupid expensive. No, it was 2020. 2022. Because the Phillies made the playoffs that year. And that was when the Mets were really, really good and collapsed. So it was 2022 I went. It was Nola versus DeGrom. And it was just stupid expensive to get there. Stupid expensive for the food. It was just very, very expensive. So I paid $13 for my souvenir cup at Target Field. Fantastic. My only complaint I really had was the team store did not have anything my size, because I always like to get a jersey as well for a player of that team, and I wanted to get a Royce Lewis one. And there's nothing my size, so. And this is just like a Major League Baseball thing. Major League Baseball, please start making stuff for bigger guys like me. It's really annoying when we want to actually waste our money at your stadiums. And you have nothing our size.
And I think that's just not necessarily the size. I think it's just that I've noticed ballparks are getting more picky with what they're putting out there, because I'm sure they just expect everything to be online. I haven't been into a team store in a ballpark in years, except I went last year in Houston, I think, and I was I was a little shocked at the lack of selection. Like, I might not buy anything, but I'm just gonna look. Yeah. You know, and I can't tell you where the Twins team store was. It in the outfield.
So it was, if you come in the first baseline gate, that's where it is.
Okay, I bought a couple beers over there, but that was my whole experience on the first base side.
But again, very nice. If I'm going to rank Target Field as a ballpark, so number one of the ones I've seen is PNC Park, and it's always going to be PNC Park. That is the nicest ballpark in baseball. You have the view of the city and the view of the river. It's perfect. And this isn't just because I was born in Pittsburgh and lived in Pittsburgh for a little bit. It's a genuinely nice ballpark. It's gorgeous. Number two, Citizens Bank Park. Yes, expensive, but still a beautiful ballpark. You get the view of Center City from center field. Ashburn Alley is fantastic. There's not a bad seat in that ballpark. Even the cheaper seats in Citizens Bank Park are fantastic. Target Field is number three for me. I had such a good time at Target Field. Everyone was very, very nice. Fantastic park. And then number four is Fenway, and number five is Citi Field. Again, Citi Field was a miserable experience, not just because Mets fans were absolutely miserable, but like the ballpark was miserable. The company I with was fantastic. Like being with my buddies was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But as a ballpark, Citi Field blows. I will not go to Citi Field again.
I'm really jealous because I bought Ben a Nationals ticket last year, and he got sick and he couldn't make it. And I was a little disappointed there. So
I should have let you know. I would have come up for that.
I should have. I know. It was Father's Day. So It was I think I might have.
I wasn't doing anything.
Dang it. I might have. Yeah. I can't remember if I told you or if I told other ones of our friends, because I don't think I realized how close everything was in the East Coast until I met you in Jersey.
Oh, yeah, dude. The East and Coast then I was, is very close together.
Holy crap.
Like if you take. So like Philadelphia is kind of like the central of the East Coast, and like everything's 4 hours from it most. So like DC's like a 3 hour drive, Baltimore's two, and in the other direction, New York's an hour and a half. Boston's like 3 hours. Like everything's pretty close to each other. So that's kind of nice about the East Coast and Philadelphia in general.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyways, that's real quick.
Yes.
Yeah, getting back to the Twins here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the game. East We're... Coast.
Yeah.
Supremacy. Yeah, the game. So, fantastic people at the game. I wore my Nick Castellanos powder blue Phillies jersey, simply because it was the closest thing I had to Twins colors, because they have the powder blues. But people were confused as to why a Phillies fan was there. And I told the one fan that I talked to that I enjoyed seeing the Phillies beat the White Sox so bad, I jumped on a plane and decided to come to Minnesota to see another team beat them as badly. So they got a chuckle out of that. It was history in the making, because the White Sox got shut out 7-0. And it was the eighth time in 22 games that the White Sox had been shut out, which was a major league record. So I got to see major league history with how bad the White Sox are. Was great. Got to see some White Sox legends like Rich Hill and Chris Flexen enter the game. You know, good stuff there.
Oh my God, you saw Chris Flexen. I need to pull up a box score.
I saw this. Eduardo Julian hit a nuke off Chris Flexen.
Dude, he's my favorite. He's one of my top five favorite players in baseball right now.
Dude, he's sick.
And that's from his time in Wichita. He had 500 at bats in Wichita and just absolutely killed it. And he's one of my inbred cousins.
There you go.
He's French Canadian. We're very inbred.
How about that?
Story for a different podcast, but New France was founded by 8,000 people within two generations. I think we were all second cousins. So if you go back 13 generations, give or take, from me, it starts to get a little repetitive. Anyway, so I have affinity. I have that affinity for Abraham Toro, Eduardo Julian. Give me some other French Canadians here.
I'm
sure there's
any.
A ton in hockey, and I can't think of any. Yeah. But right. So anyway, Julian's just a really good hitter.
He hit an absolute nuke.
Yeah, another friend of the podcast, Ryan, once told me he's going to wind up. He said this with an air of exacerbation almost, but he said he's going to wind up being like sixth all time in doubles in Major League history when we were watching him at the World Baseball Classic, and I was like, yeah, he is very quietly going to. Have one of those careers, but you were there on Monday, right?
Yeah, so Monday I was there.
April 22nd. Got it. Okay,
let me pull up this box score. White Sox got shut out.
Nicky Lopez, leadoff hitter. Oh,
dude,
slay!
Dude, what a leadoff hitter! Yep.
Okay,
yeah,
Paul DeJong, Dominic Fletcher, Danny Mendick, Corey Lee. Oh man.
Dude,
this
just,
team
is an absolute horrid lineup. And they had the bases loaded twice and could not score.
Like, it sounds like the A's.
They were bad.
It sounds... Oh, all right. This is a little bit of a carryover from my experience in Minota. The Sunday game was Chris Paddock versus... James Caprillion. No?
Oh, nice.
Maybe Dalton Jeffries? I think it was Jeffries. Yes, it was Dalton Jeffries versus Chris Paddock. Chris Paddock tore his UCL in
All
that
right.
game. So So he walked off the mound, and the next day they said it, Tommy John, and I was like, oh, I mean, I don't know where his career was going, but it's good to see he's back.
Yeah, he had a good start.
You also saw Ronnie Henriquez, who's another certified frat guy, because he's maybe 5'10". He's maybe my height, maybe a little shorter. And he was in the Mitch Garver trade. He's good. I mean, I don't know what they're using him as a reliever. He doesn't have the reliever stuff.
Yeah.
He has the Jordan Lyles gamer attitude. I feel like he's just going to hang around as a bulk starter for a while. So
that's how he felt.
Yeah. I don't know how many innings he got here. Let me see.
He got the
last two innings.
He finished the game off. Yeah.
Whoa. Chris Paddock got 10 strikeouts. No walks.
Dude, the White Sox are bad. Like, really bad.
What?
Yeah. So they got shut down. Eighth time. Major League history was cool to see. Target Field gets a thumbs up for me. Minnesota fans get a thumbs up for me. Minnesotans in general get a thumbs up for me. Extremely nice state, and you know, I'm gonna beg my family for us to move out there, because I would love to go. If I can't move to Pittsburgh, which is my dream state or my dream city to be in, take me to Minnesota. I don't care how much it snows. I want to go back to those incredibly nice people.
Listen, I love you with all my heart, but there's major Stockholm syndrome vibes for you to say, my dream situation is Pittsburgh. Like, I know Pittsburgh is nice, but like,
it's such a beautiful city, though.
But like, that's very much like I'm being held hostage in Pennsylvania.
No,
I'm blinking Morse code for.
I could leave. I almost left Pennsylvania for Myrtle Beach, but
really?
I would choose Pittsburgh. Yeah, I had a job offer in Myrtle Beach. And my bimbo of an ex-wife said no, because she didn't want to be away from her family.
I mean, good call, bad person, from what I know about your personal life. So good call, bad person.
Yeah.
Well, second of all, that would have been a major decrease in your quality of living.
Like the beach.
So I'm, yeah, sure, it's pretty, there's a bunch of sand, whatever, but like, South Carolina would have been jarring. Just the South in general, unless you're used to it.
Yeah.
It's a decrease in living. In everything.
It was a good
thing. It's all encompassing. Right. Right. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
Maybe get to Minnesota someday.
Yeah. Maybe. Or back to Pittsburgh. You know, who knows? Or I stay here and stay close to my family. Because I have a niece. Who I love dearly, and I want to watch that kid grow and actually be around her cousins and future cousins. So
that's sweet.
Yeah. So yeah, that was Minnesota. That was my trip. I loved it. It was a great time. A great work trip. We did great work. Got to see the Twins. Got to meet great people. Loved it. Highly recommend Minneapolis. All right, moving on. The MLB Players Association is going to take action to correct the Fanatics uniforms. They realize there's something wrong. They're going to try and go back to the bigger lettering, correct the color of the jerseys to actually match. The pants won't be see-through anymore, and they want to handle the sweating issue where the jerseys are just soaked and dripping. They expect this to be fixed by no later than the start of the 2025 season. Thank God.
They really coalesced around blaming Nike for this. And like, yeah, we all know it was Fanatics to a degree, but I'm really starting to wonder, like, it sounds like they do have a credible thing against Nike. I don't know what it is, but...
I'm just glad the action's being taken.
Right. And this is definitely a question for Don, because that was the last time I was talking to them, the last time I was on, and that's who I really may hear from. But what would you say the impact of this is in the short term, having to watch the bad jerseys for the rest of the year, at least.
I think we're all going to get used to them, and then when we see the new ones next year, we're going to have a greater appreciation for what we had with the newer ones being back again. I mean, I guess the old ones being back again.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to have a greater appreciation for the jerseys now that they'll be back to norm. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I could. I'm excited about that. I mean, I'm not much of a jersey head. So maybe this conversation would have been better with someone else, but I do think that it might fade as a blip in the season's radar, like how the Otani translator debacle is already starting to look like a blip.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the baseball season. There's so many blips along the way. And it doesn't feel like narratives linger.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Speaking of Otani, some quick hits, because we didn't have a lot happen this week. So some quick hits before we get into Do You Buy It? Otani played against the Blue Jays this weekend, was greeted to a chorus of boos, and responded by hitting an absolute nuke on the first pitch he saw. So awesome for Shohei Ohtani to shut up Blue Jays fans. Wyatt Langford hit his first home run of his career as an inside the park home run. Pretty cool way for him to get that.
He's so fast.
Yeah, he's a fast dude, especially for the power he has. This is a fun one. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, he has power, but like, he doesn't look like he has power. I think he's just that good of a hitter where he manipulates baseballs. Anyway.
I agree. Yeah, I completely agree. All right, so Aaron Boone got ejected during a game for something a fan said. I guess the umpire wasn't happy with Aaron Boone calling out whatever happened. And the umpire told Boone, if you say something again, I'm going to eject you. And then a fan from the stands shouted, this is BS. Well, the umpire thought it was Boone and ejected him. And Boone was like, I didn't say anything. And then went on a great tirade against the umpire. Boone got ejected for something a fan said.
Quick trivia question here for you.
Yeah.
After the 2003 season, Aaron Boone did not play in 2004. What team did he play for in 2005? He hit 243 in 143 games for this American League team.
I'm trying to think. I don't think it was the A's.
No.
Wasn't the Rangers.
AL Central.
Was it the Tigers?
Mm-mm. One more guess and I'll give it to you.
AL Central. Cleveland?
Yep. Ah. Yep. He spent the next 2 years with Cleveland. Then he went to the Marlins in free agency, the Nationals, then the Astros.
Huh.
Weird, right?
That's quite the career, going from Cincinnati to New York for half a season.
He never, ever played in another playoff game.
Wow.
Like, after that 03 World Series, that was his playoff career.
Wow. I mean, hey, he made an impact. Like, he made a huge impact.
Right,
especially
but
against Boston.
Like, I mean, man, that's rough to be hanging around. I mean, good for him for still being in the major leagues, albeit as a manager. Because usually a lot of these fringy guys who become managers are catchers. So... And he's, of course, corner infield, so. Anyway, that that series in New York was fun enough. I think the A's scored 11 runs in four games, which is not good. Somehow they took the split because you don't really need, you only need a one run lead for Mason Miller. Like, he's not, he's not going to give up anything. He'll just throw 102.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he builds up to the starter that everyone expected him to be. I always thought he'd, not always, I set my expectations low for Mason Miller, the closer. So if this is all he is and he's just Andrew Miller, oh man, this is going to make some mediocre A's offenses look great, which is just what Liam Hendricks did. So.
All right.
Ryan Madsen. Anyway.
Oh, dude, Ryan Madsen. I loved Ryan Madsen when he was in Philly. He was great.
I mean, Ryan Madsen wasn't that. Him and Blake Treinen are just intertwined, but anyway.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move into Do You Buy It? So we're going to go through, you know, some teams or players, and we're going to see if you buy it. I'm going to start here. So Ranger Suarez recently, his 32 2/3 scoreless inning streak came to an end. But Ranger has been absolutely ridiculous this season. Currently, he is 5-0 with a 1.32 ERA in 41 innings with 40 strikeouts, a 0.63 whip, and he's at 2.1 WAR so far. And then the other breakout Philly this year, and this is my favorite because I've always said it was going to happen, is Alec Bohm. He's hitting .354. With 26 runs batted in as the Phillies cleanup man. 434 OBP, 596 slug, 188 OPS plus. He's hitting doubles like crazy. He had another one today, so he's up to 12 doubles on the season. He's good. He's on an absolute tear. And I guess the question is, do you buy both these breakout seasons? Do you buy Ranger Suarez breaking out into an ace-level pitcher, it's looking like, and Alec Bohm looking like a very, very competent cleanup hitter?
Well, let's start with Ranger. So he debuted at a 22-year-old Philly. That feels like he's so young. What were your first impressions of Ranger?
First impressions, like
first memories,
very, very carefree on the mound. My first real memory of Ranger was a complete game shutout he threw in 2021. Before that, he was just a reliever. But like he really kind of broke out in 2021, 2022, he was in the rotation full time. 23, he was injured a bit, but when he was healthy, you know, he was decent. And now this year, he's shown a lot of promise and has taken a huge step forward as a pitcher. He feels like the Venezuelan Cliff Lee to me. Very carefree on the mound, doesn't let anything bother him, much like Cliff Lee was when he was a Philly. And now he's pitching like Cliff Lee, which is incredible.
Well, I mean, I know whenever you see a good pitcher, you're like, oh, man, they're like Cliff Lee, which is sweet and endearing. But, like, I don't know who Ranger Suarez reminds me of because it's the NL East. I haven't watched him pitch ever. Sure. Might have listened to a start or two, but, like, I had to look him up when you said that. And what I'm seeing here makes me think maybe his peak was 2021 and 2, but I think that if he keeps this up for the whole year, I will buy another two seasons of ace level Ranger Suarez.
Fair enough.
You know, like his K through nine
playoff stats too. Like when the lights are on, like he doesn't have to be a high strikeout pitcher because he gets the ground balls and he's such a good fielder that doesn't matter. Like, I mean, his stuff is just able to get dudes out, whether it be on strikeouts or a flyout or a ground ball.
Right. And if he's a bull, if he can handle the 120 plus innings a game, then we're starting to talk about someone who's going to hang around for a while, even if he's not good. And I think that's something that's important to think about here, because he could be 34 and still giving you 140 innings of an 8.78 K through 9, which is his K through 9 this year. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll take that. Even if he's not getting the results he once did. I mean, he has a 2.01 XERA. Like a 1.32 ERA, but like, man, that's I died by that. Granted, last year seemed a little unlucky. This year seems a little lucky, I think. But what does it really matter? It seems like I'd buy this. It seems like he's only walking dudes at a 3.5% clip.
He does not walk anyone.
I mean, 8.9 was about what he had for the last 2 years. That makes sense. But if he really keeps up this 3.5, that's like George Kirby levels of control. And I guess, yeah, you have to buy that. You know, like, you gotta. So,
and it's not only that, but it's like what he does in the playoffs, too. He has ice in his veins. Like, he gets on the mound in these big situations, and it doesn't bother him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just delivers.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lefty, and I definitely see him as the number one starter for a mediocre Detroit Tigers team in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying he's going to leave the Phillies, but I could see him as a known entity. Well,
I hope they work on an extension for him after this year, because they'll only have him through 2025.
Really? Okay, yeah. They got to get that sorted out.
Yeah.
He definitely seems... I would definitely buy him to maybe not be an ace, but to be a
solid mediocre number two.
Yeah, or like the ace of a bad team. A
solid number two. Which, if you look at the Phillies, number two on the Phillies is really number three when you're pitching behind Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola.
Right.
And, I mean, that doesn't even get into Chris Sanchez, who's broken out this year as well.
Who?
Christopher Sanchez.
I'm looking him up.
He was the pitcher the Rays traded for Curtis Meade. And everyone laughed at it and viewed it as a steal by the Rays. And last year was a true, like, okay, maybe this trade wasn't so bad. And this year he's been kind of backing up, like, yeah, this trade's more even than we thought.
Christopher Sanchez, he's 27, which, for comparison, is barely younger than Ranger.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. He doesn't look that bad.
Solid number three, which I'll take. You know, we have our ace. We have ace number two. We have a really solid number two starter in Ranger Suarez. Sanchez has broken out. And then Taiwan Walker. Now, as for Boehm, how do you feel about Boehm? Looking at what Boehm's doing this year.
I want to be at least mean to one of the people who you picked. However,
fair enough.
You picked some good ones, and you picked my favorite Philly, and he's been my favorite Philly the whole time. And, man, I mean, 184 WRC plus, that feels so good for a
not to mention
universal
the defense has improved.
Right. I always think the defense was going to be there. He's too tall and too athletic for it to be ugly, even if he is naturally going to be a first baseman.
Right.
He'll be there eventually, but still, I always thought in college, which is where I remember seeing my first impression of him was in college. I always thought that, God, he's so tall, you know, like, of course, he'll be a lanky first baseman who will hit 30 home runs without even thinking. And I think the big difference this year is the walk rate, right? He's doubled his walk percentage from 6.9 to 12.4. I don't know how sustainable that is, because usually when guys double their walk rate, keep their strikeouts around the same, something's gotta give. He's got a 400 BABIP. Isn't necessarily bad. He had a 296 last year, so maybe the cosmos has come around to him, but I don't think he's anything more than a 3-win player, but I think he'll have a 5-win season. And this could very well be it. He's 27, you know?
Yeah.
He's got lineup protection in air quotes. So they say, I mean,
he's hitting between Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto. Those are two solid players to hit between.
His expected batting average is .314. His average is .354. The regression is coming. Mm-hmm. So I think the question is, the regression stop him from hitting 3 wins, or does he hit 3 wins and he still kind of regresses? The big thing
for me with Boehm is what he's been doing with runners in scoring position. He's hitting over .460 with runners in scoring position.
That's big.
Which, what you want from a cleanup hitter. And like, it's fine that he doesn't have the power of a prototypical cleanup hitter. He hits doubles.
He does. And he is a Sean Murphy doubles hitter, dude.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see here.
I'm very pleased with the Boehm breakout.
Right, of course, because Philadelphia. Right, because Philadelphia was so finicky. Not finicky. So I'm looking for the right word here. They kept their respect from him until he really proved it.
Yeah.
And here he is proving it.
Yep.
I think I'd definitely buy Ranger. Boehm less certain. I think that's my final take.
Enough. All right, what you got for me?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to go with 3 guys.
Okay.
None of them are A's. I might throw in a bonus athletic at the end of this, depending on how I feel, depending on how you treat me. Let's go with the first one here. I'm not going to tell you his name, but I'm going to read out his slash line. He's hitting .301, on base percentage .369, slugging .624. His WRC plus is 167. He's already accumulated 1 F4.
Okay.
He's only walking 8% of the time. He's striking out 18% of the time. His ISO is 323. And he's a shortstop in the NL East. What is his name?
Oh boy. Shortstop in the NL East.
I'll give you one more stat. This is
CJ Abrams.
You got it. CJ Abrams has a
three. I buy CJ Abrams 1,000%. That dude is going to torture the Phillies.
Dude, he's good.
He is good. Dude, he's so good.
Okay, and with all of those stats, he's hitting .301. His XBA is .332. So he should be hitting better.
Listen, man, the Nationals nailed that Juan Soto trade. Mackenzie Gore has had a breakout year. CJ Abrams looks like a star. James Wood is going to be a power hitting demon. And Robert Hassel has kind of figured some things out. The Nats easily won the Juan Soto trade.
By a ton.
Like, they really, really nailed this. And Abrams and Wood and, you know, Dylan Cruz as like the core, and Mackenzie Gore as like your core four for a franchise, that's really good.
I'm worried about their next contention cycle, who they're going to pitch. I like Gore. I think he's a mid-tier starter on a good team, a mid-tier starter, basically a Ranger Suarez. But I don't know who else they've got.
They're going to be spending money. They're going to have to spend money on pitching.
So the problem with these second fiddle teams in one market, White Sox, A's to an extent, maybe not anymore, Angels, Mets, et cetera, they're not going to spend as much. And if they do spend and make an error, it's going to be catastrophic.
Well, so that's like for spent. The. That's
but nice. Like, okay, and then they go buy Patrick Corbin, you know?
But for every Patrick Corbin, you also have a Max Scherzer who worked out.
Oh, you know, yeah, yeah. So I trust them in what they're doing, but CJ Abrams, when I should have invited you to that Nationals game, CJ Abrams had a 67 WRC plus, and he looked bad. And the company I kept at the game was trashing him. I was like, nah, he looks good. I mean, he was embarrassing at shortstop, but I was like, yeah, he's 23 or 22 at the time. Yeah. Whatever, he'll get it. We're good. But like,
he's got it.
His walk and strikeout rates haven't really changed. He's walking a little bit more. He's striking out a little bit less.
He reminds me of Jimmy Rollins a lot.
Yeah, like that's like good
the
comp.
Swing reminds me a lot of J-Roll. The swagger reminds me a lot of J-Roll. Like he reminds me a lot of J-Roll.
I think he need the Ron Washington School of Hard Knocks to be able to win a gold glove. So maybe he'll never win a gold glove. But I think that what he's doing, even if he's like, even if the results go up and down for a few years, I mean, he's at star level. He's at star level because he's a shortstop and we don't have those, you know. So, I definitely buy whatever he's doing, even if the Nationals are still bad.
All right, what are you next to?
The next one, we've got pitcher in the AL West.
Okay.
The AL Best, otherwise known as the Torture Division. If you think the NL East is tortured, ain't got nothing on my division.
The NL East is just the Braves and Phillies having the most toxic rivalry possible right now.
Right.
And then the Mets doing their best seppuku impression.
Right. And then the Marlins are just barely a baseball team at this point.
Yeah.
So he's got 29 innings this year.
Okay.
K through 9 over 10.
Okay.
He's already got a 1.96 FIP. No, that's not true. He has a 2.86 FIP. An ERA of 2.12, an xERA of 2.77. He's 24 years old. He was drafted out of college in 2020.
Okay.
Who is this pitcher?
In 2020. 2020, you said a 2. Is it Reed Detmers?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
You got it.
I'm trying to think of young pitchers in that. The only one I can think of is Detmers.
Right.
I buy it because Detmers has had the pedigree. It's just been a matter of figuring out his stuff. And it seems like he has this year, which is great for the Angels, but the Angels also suck.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Detmers is a good pitcher and a good trade piece in a year or two.
Do you trade Detmers at 25 years old with the knowledge that you might have him for a couple more years?
Yeah, because there's the team has no farm system. And this is a hot take, but Mike Trout is holding this team back. Mike Trout refusing to ask out for a trade to a contender is holding the Angels back because they could reload the farm on that trade. And instead, Trout wants to be a perennial loser and is holding the Angels back.
Okay. So
I don't care that he's playing like Mike Trout again. The Angels have nothing around him.
You don't care that the greatest player of our generation is hitting like the greatest player of our generation again.
Okay. I mean, it's great to see, but like,
he's doing this with a 194 BABIP.
He's
doing this unluckily.
I know. It's Mike Trout. But dude, you're holding your team back by not asking for a trade because there is nothing around you. There will be nothing around you for a long time. You will probably be in your final season by the time the Angels actually somehow manage to make the playoffs again. Ask out. Stop being a perennial loser. Come home to Philadelphia.
Okay, so you and I both know that his only World Series appearance will be with the Phillies in his age 42 season.
Oh, 1,000%. Right?
And they're going to lose, because I think that would be the funniest outcome. But sorry about it. But I don't think it's net. I don't think we should be holding him to, you need to swap teams.
Oh, I am.
I
think baseball is better if Mike Trout is in the playoffs this year.
I think he's not going to be in the playoffs
with the Angels.
Right. I think we should be holding Angels accountable. I don't think it should be
accountable
on...
too.
Right. I know.
Terrible job building that team.
Right. It's awful. I don't think we should be saying,
my God, Shohei Ohtani gave him the chance to come back and they didn't answer his phone call.
Right. Well, I mean, the Angels sold fentanyl to one of their homegrown drafted players, and then he died in a hotel room on the job, essentially, and then Ohtani's translator started getting a gambling addiction.
I thought Skaggs was drafted by the Diamondbacks.
He was traded to the Angels in the minor leagues. I think that counts. Okay. Right? Sort of. I think.
Okay. Sure.
Or maybe he was drafted by the Angels, traded to the Diamondbacks, and then traded back.
Maybe.
I gotta make sure. Anyway, it's a debacle of an organization, but it's not on Trout to get out of it. It's on the Angels to figure it out. Yeah. Baseball is better when one of the best players in history stays with one team the whole time. Great. You know?
I agree on that. But Mike Trout is not going to see the playoffs.
No. Also, the other thing is Mike Trout is not. He's not someone non-baseball fans recognized, Subway commercials aside. That's not who his personality is. Baseball can't make him be an icon. So you might as well stay with one bad team for 20 years, you know? He'll get to the playoffs at some point as a washed up old guy. And I know it's a problem and we're robbed of postseason greatness, but also the postseason is a crapshoot. Who knows if he just doesn't go 1-for-20 in the World Series. Also, Tyler Skaggs was drafted by the Angels, made his debut in Arizona, and then traded back to the Angels at his age 22 season. So, homegrown enough, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
But Detmers feels like the best Angels pitcher of his age, sort of, since then, especially because poor Pablo Sandoval.
Feels like the best young Angels pitcher they've had since Jared Weaver and Nick Adenhart.
Yes. And I thought that was going to be Patrick Sandoval. Oh my God, poor guy. 27 innings.
He's not good.
His velocity, 6.33 ERA. Hey, you take that back, good sir.
He's not good.
Nowhere near his 3.7 F4 in 22.
Yeah.
Honestly, nowhere near his dominant performance versus Team USA in the WBC. He threw 8 strikeouts in 7 innings against one of the best lineups of white dudes we've seen. So, anyway, I don't know what happened to the Angels with Sandoval, but I buy Detmers cautiously. So...
Right, and then who's your last guy?
He's already accumulated 1.5 wins. He has 167 WRC plus. He's hitting 283. Unfortunately, this is really sad. His parents named him Smelly. His full name is Smelly De La Cruz.
Okay, so this would be my... Other than Bryce Harper, my favorite player in baseball at the moment, Ellie De La Cruz. And yes, I buy it. He's legit. He's a star. He is basically Ronald Acuna Jr. at shortstop. He's legit, man.
What makes you say that?
Well, the improvements he's made this year compared to last year. He's already taking more walks. He's making better contact. He's making smarter swing choices. The power is there. The speed is insane. He's bunting for hits now as well. He's doing everything that a guy with his power and speed should be doing. Because as a pitcher, you're going to go up there and you're not going to know how this guy's going to approach you. He's either going to swing for the fences, and if he makes contact, it is going out because he has some of the most ridiculous power I've seen from a shortstop. Or he's just going to drop a bunt on you, and he's so quick, you're not going to be able to throw him out. Yes, the strikeouts are still there, but who doesn't strike out in baseball these days? The fact that he's taking smarter at-bats, taking walks, and making more contact is enough for me to know that this dude is a star and is only going to keep improving in the majors. Like, he's an easy shoe-in for a 40-80 season. Okay, we just saw Ronald Acuña do that last year. And now we have another guy that could potentially do that in Ellie De La Cruz.
Okay. And,
like, Cincinnati needs a star like him. Like, I love the dude. He's easily my favorite non-Philly. I have a City Connect Reds jersey of his coming in. I love the dude. He's fantastic.
Okay. So I picked this in part because I know that you're a fan of him. I sell this so hard. Oh my goodness. Okay, so he usually walks at a 7% rate-ish, vaguely. Last year was 8.2. In AAA last year, he walked at 14%. That's double. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That was, and he had a 151 WRC plus.
Yeah.
That's great. That's AAA. Maybe he does know that level. I would say he knows that level, and I think he's graduated beyond a bad player or bad AAA player. He's at least a bad major league player. But I think that's all he is. He's still striking out above a 30% rate. Somehow he's walking 15% of the time this year. I don't think that's sustainable. I don't know where that number is coming from, quite frankly.
It's coming from smarter decisions.
Okay, all right. I don't believe that, but that's sweet.
It's better pitch recognition that we're seeing from him.
380 BABIP, that's not good. He has the power, right? Like, his max exit velocity, which doesn't really tell you much except that it was 119 last year. That's really fast.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a 50th to 75th percentile exit velocity that you can judge a player by. But, I mean, he had 21 barrels last year. He has 10 this year already. That's good. However, he has a 587 slugging, a 516 expected slugging. So, like, he has power, but he's somehow hitting more power than we think he is. And, I mean, the ex-WOBA is 388, which is lower than the WOBA of 427. So he's overperforming and under-delivering. I think because he's a shortstop and because he's ungodly fast, just freakishly fast, he's going to be hanging around. But I do not sell him above a 100 WRC plus 2 years from now.
Fair enough. I completely disagree. I think he is a star.
Right. So we will see in two years. This will be a fun argument to revisit in years to come.
This is one I feel very good about.
All right. I'm excited to see how it goes because you have full permission to dunk on me if he does turn into, like, if he has an all-star game or two, I'd see that. But if he, like, keeps up the 15% walk rate, yeah, you can dunk on me, but man, I don't see it. So
fair enough. We'll see. All right. Do you have anything else?
We talked the last time I was on, we talked about the foreign games. Well, not the last time, the second to last time. What did you think about the Mexico City game?
I didn't watch any of it.
Right?
I did not get to watch any of it.
Right. So, like, we talk about these foreign games about what's the point. Like, you know, Dylan Ryan and I were like, what's the point of playing a game in a foreign country if it's just friendly? what might as well be just a friendly. What's the difference between a regular season game? So let's, I mean, so it's Mexico, you know, it's our neighbors. We'll join forces with them as one country in a couple gates or something, I assume. So it's not necessarily like, oh, they're going to Tokyo or they're going to Seoul. How crazy. But like, it was barely a blip on a slow news week. It was barely a blip.
Yeah.
Granted, it was the Rockies. Who cares? But like, the elevation thing, you know, you'd think that the Rockies and the Astros playing in Mexico would be a big story if you were from 10 years in the past. And instead, we barely cared.
Yeah.
And so I do think that says something about our relationship with Mexico as a country, and also the inevitability of them being the next country to get an expansion team. Like, we need a team in Monterrey, but it's just not safe yet.
Right. Yeah, I agree. All right, I think that's going to wrap us up here. I don't really have anything else here. Other than, I think the Rays are not making the playoffs this year. They seem like a bad team, especially after getting swept by the White Sox. And we covered the Reds in a way by talking about Ellie, but I do see them as a legit threat in the NL Central.
I think so, my hot take is that the Rays will bounce back to at least be a wild card team, but not a good one. Also, I think that Cleveland is missing the playoffs.
Ooh, that's a good one.
A 500 batting average on low realm exit velocity. What, it's like 70 miles per hour exit velocity and they're hitting 500? Yeah, they're not making the playoffs.
Well, we'll see. All right, we are going to wrap it up here. Frack, thank you for joining me as always.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right, and Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. Our theme music is composed by Chuck Lease. Naeem does the editing, as always. Rain Delay Radio releases at 1 a.m., usually, every Monday morning. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.